This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being here as we enjoy the last week, the last few days of 2025 with some great topics coming up. And State Senator, I'm going to get this wrong eventually after saying State Representative for so long, but State Senator and candidate for Governor Christine Drazen, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
And where do we find you today?
You know, I'm in the Dalles today.
And I was, a little surprised to realize that's part of your district, huh?
Yes, I'm doing legislative work today. So I'm in the Dalles and Hood River today. And it goes all the way down to my half of the district, which is Canby. But it's just such a beautiful part of the state. And it's just been such a privilege to spend time with folks up here. And I'm looking forward to representing them in the upcoming short session.
The weather in the gorge could be especially incredible, except when it isn't.
I know. But I get the sense from the folks who live up here that they love it. And they'll take it. Like, just, you know, it's just such a beautiful place.
Yeah, I just remember a few ice storms over there being not so much fun to deal with. But that's a whole other topic in itself. So give us an update. You announced a while back that you are running for governor. How do you feel it's going so far?
You know, it's been really, really a strong start to the race. And it's a long ways to go. We have a May primary and then, of course, the November election. But, you know, Oregonians across the state have really responded to the campaign and they're excited to vote in May and, you know, have been gathering endorsements and, you know, over 500 people have put their name on the list and said they're excited to support the campaign. And we get more every day and we've raised over $1 million and just continue to hit the marks that we need to. But it's about winning over hearts and minds of Oregonians and convincing people to believe in the future of our state. And I'm running to make Oregon the number one place in the nation to raise a family, start a business, grow your business, and get a world-class education or learn a trade. That is an ambitious vision. And I think that anything less of that is, you know, turning our backs on the future of our state, which has been happening for way too long. And it's time for us to really believe in our own future and our own capacity to solve these problems.
Last time around, you had a close race. Of course, you had a three-way race that resulted in it tightening up a bit more. Anybody ask you why you're running a second time?
You know, that question is an interesting one for me because I think that what people are really asking is, why didn't you leave like everybody else? Why didn't you give up like everybody else? And that's the history for us in far too many cases, is that sometimes when things, you know, don't go the way that we hope, they leave the party or, you know, they move away or, you know, whatever that looks like. And that's just not me. I just do not give up. And the state has gone the wrong direction. Just the facts are the facts. It's not personal. It's not partisan. And, you know, pick your metric. And we're going the wrong direction. And that's housing and it's addiction and it's homelessness. And it's all these really, really day-to-day issues around affordability. I mean, we are the fourth highest state in the nation for gas prices before Tina Kotek's massive increase on, you know, the cost to own and drive a car. We're 48th in housing affordability. We're 47th in business friendliness. We're fifth highest for food costs. You know, we're fifth worst for jobs. And we've shed 24,000 jobs in a year and counting, you know, between June of last year and July of this year. Those are all things that are solvable for us. And the election is really about what vision do you want for the future of your state. I don't give up. I believe in this place. I believe in the people of this place. I love Oregon. And I want to fight for its future.
Every once in a while, I'll hear somebody else in my world of media talk about the gas price where they are, and I always think that I've heard it wrong for a moment. And of course, the effort out there to repeal the part of the ODOT package, not all of it, but part of it, and the gas tax, a big part of that as well. And I know I got an email earlier this morning from Bruce Starr, who said next hour they're going to be giving turning more signatures in. And I guess that effort's reached a 250,000 signatures, which is, I believe, pretty unprecedented in the state's history.
I think that it is absolutely glorious to see Oregonians push back against entitled politicians who think that they know best. That session, 97%+ of the comments, you know, we get a lot of public testimony when we're in legislative session. The percentage of people that opposed these tax increases just because they can't afford it. And frankly, the Department of Transportation isn't trustworthy right now. Like, they are not doing a good job with taxpayer dollars. And so that combination, Oregonians were really clear, we don't want this and we can't afford it. And there were politicians that said, you know, listen, you just sit back and you just take what we give you. And they passed it anyway. And it's just amazing and so encouraging and so appropriate to see Oregonians step up and say, we told you no, we meant no. And 250,000 signatures, 250,000 signatures, there could not be any message that's clearer than we can't afford it. The answer is no.
You said that it was 97% opposition in the comments. Have you ever had anything with that percentage?
No. Nothing that people paid attention to. I mean, you might have a couple of issues where you only get a few comments, so it's kind of skews your numbers, right? But something like this, that's as consequential as this, it is absolutely unprecedented. And we certainly saw it on the referendum side as people were willing to lend their signatures and their opposition to these cost increases and make sure that they have the last word, that it gets on the ballot. Now we just need to make sure that the Democrats don't game the system and try to deny Oregonians the opportunity to vote on it. It's going to be really, really important that they actually allow this thing to come all the way forward to the ballot and let Oregonians have the final say, because they are demanding it.
Now, over the weekend, I heard some rumblings that in the short session, there might be an effort to just repeal it and kind of start over. What have you heard there?
Yeah, I have heard the same. Of their options, they can try to kind of jimmy rig when it ends up on the ballot. So it's not November. That's something that they could try to do. And they could try to just repeal all the provisions that people sent out to the ballot through the referendum process. So that's available to them for sure. They shouldn't do it. They should let Oregonians have the final word on this thing. But it is something that they could do. They could continue to not learn the lesson, disrespect Oregonians, and ignore how important this is to people, and they could repeal the whole thing.
With the high percentage of comments against it, with the number of signatures, this obviously had to be a lot more than an effort of citizens than just the Republican Party.
No, yeah, this isn't partisan at all. Kyle, to your point, this is Oregonians. Like, I think too often people that are in power right now, they look at it like everything is about their party. It's not. It's about people. And this is so clear. I stood at those booths in the rain and I collected signatures with all the other volunteers across the state. And this was a solely volunteer effort that got this thing done. And the people that were coming and signing, they weren't declaring I'm a Republican and I support the party. They were declaring that they're Oregonians and they can't afford this tax increase. And that's so important for people to acknowledge. This has nothing to do with party affiliation. This is all of us in this together trying to tell these entitled politicians to listen and respect us. And it's been amazing to watch. And people enthusiastically signed. They would find out where the locations were that they could sign, and they drive to it during the window that the petitions were there. Like, that's on purpose. This isn't something that is happening casually. People were looking for locations to sign.
Now, as we get into the short session, obviously this may be a topic, but the short session, you've got a constitutionally limited number of days. How do you see this shaping up? Is it going to be awfully hard to get through everything during the allotted time?
Well, the short session should be for emergencies and to make sure the budget is balanced. The short session shouldn't be viewed as another long session where new ideas should come forward and be ran through. And so the legislators that treat this short session like it's just another long session are shortchanging Oregonians. The timelines are way too short for new ideas to come forward. Like, this should be technical fixes. This should be balance the budget, and we should get out of there. So, I mean, it's like you have a week in the House where you have to post for a public hearing. You have a week in the Senate where you have to post for a public hearing. These are very tight timelines for Oregonians to follow along with. So they need to stick with getting the basics done during this short session.
Now, I don't know if it varies between chambers, but my understanding is in the House, each lawmaker can put a couple of proposals out there for legislation. Is it the same in the Senate?
Yeah, it's the same in the Senate. Everybody has two concepts they can advance. And mine will be education, a big focus on letting teachers have authority back in the classrooms again, to be able to make sure that there's learning that's happening there, and also restoring some accountability and some focus on outcomes for kids and making sure that they're actually learning. And so my legislation is, you know, let them learn. And I think that's got to be the focus for our schools. And then I have legislation that was requested by some community members that are sick and tired of their kids walking over biohazards and needles to get to school. And so it gives them the opportunity to put an end to that practice. So, you know, my two pieces of legislation are going to be in response to some really bad situations that have evolved around addiction. And of course, trying to restore our schools.
Now, given the short timeline and maybe this ODOT package question, do you see the lawmakers running out of time before they get to everything?
Well, I think that if they would use their time wisely, that they could rebalance the ODOT budget without raising taxes. I think that's got to be job one. If there's any chance that it's not rebalanced at the end of this session, certainly Tina should not call another special session because they don't know how to lead and govern. So they need to get it done in the short session. That's possible. We've given them a lot of roadmaps to get that done. And so they got to get ODOT done. And we do need to make sure that the budget is in balance. And we have to fight against any of their efforts to increase taxes. I think that they're going to try to increase taxes. I think that they haven't learned the lesson yet. And certainly the administration the Republican Congress passed H.R. 1, which provided no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, and some real improvements for businesses for expensing and depreciation. We need to be sure that the folks in charge in Salem don't try to take those tax benefits away from Oregonians at a state level. And they might make a run at that because they'll be wanting to look for more money. And so those are the things that we got to look out for in this upcoming short session. We got to get in, we got to get out, balance the budget, and do no harm. No raising taxes.
Not that far back, you had the senator in your district move out for another opportunity. What caused you to go ahead and seek the Senate after being in the House and achieving a lot of things there?
Yeah, no, it was an absolute privilege to serve in the House and to represent my hometown community in Salem. But I really do believe in service, and serving in the Senate was an opportunity to do more while I'm still in the legislature and to serve a larger community, and I'm grateful for that opportunity. And certainly with the support of Senator Bonham, that was important to me, that was something that he wanted. And I'm grateful to have the opportunity. It has been it's been a really great experience to serve in the Senate so far.
So what can you do in the Senate that you can't do in the House? I know over the years I've heard some folks from both parties really talk about why they stayed in a particular chamber or why they moved to a different one. And it seems like everybody's reasons are a little bit different.
Yeah, they are, you know, they do have different responsibilities. The House is where taxes start, and so the opportunity to fight against taxes, you certainly have center stage in the House because that's where you need to beat them back. And the Senate has a responsibility to vote on gubernatorial appointments. And we had our first round of appointments on the Senate floor in our last round of legislative days, and I participated in that. And also, I have a whole new set of committee assignments that I'm really looking forward to serving on. I'm on the Labor Committee. I'm on the, you know, the Human Services Committee. I'm on the General Government and Commerce Committee. And those are all committee assignments that I'm really looking forward to. In the House, I was always leadership. This is an opportunity to be a member of that chamber and serve on a larger array of committees. And so far, that's really been an experience that I'm grateful for.
So being new to the Senate, then, that probably means you're not like a vice chair of a committee or anything like that.
I am a vice chair of the Commerce Committee. The chair is Senator Meek, and we have worked well together in the past, and I'm looking forward to that opportunity. I mean, we have such a mess right now in so many categories. That committee is going to give me an opportunity to work on an issue that relates to liability around, let's say you go on a fishing trip and you sign a form that says, you know, it's one of the liability waivers. So you sign the form, you go deep sea fishing. Or let's say you go out and you go skiing, you're signing a liability waiver there too. Oregon's courts have declared that those liability waivers are unenforceable. And it means that our ski resorts can't get insurance. And if they can't get insurance, then they're having to raise rates. It's causing costs to go up. It's putting the possibility of some of those ski resorts going out of business. That could be a very real possibility in the future. So our committee will have an opportunity to fix that and fix Oregon law so that those businesses can stay in business. So if you're an adult and you know the risks and you're still willing to participate in the activity, then we need to keep those, you know, those businesses going. And so we'll have some really good work to do in that committee this session. I'm really looking forward to it.
So we're obviously about a year out, 11 months technically, out from the fall 2026 election. We've talked before about the fact that Oregon, though a number of Republicans have gotten fairly close, it's been back from the Vicatia days of the early 80s since a Republican held the office of governor. Why do you think there's a potential for it to be different this time?
You know, you just ran through it. I mean, our state is really standing up in a way that in the past we haven't. When you talk about an unprecedented number, 250,000 Oregonians that signed a referendum to say, I'm done with, you know, Tina Kotek's leadership on this issue, I'm rejecting it. That's extraordinary. That is extraordinary. And every election is an opportunity to set a new vision for the future of our state. Every election is an opportunity to fire the people that are crummy at their job and hire somebody that you trust to listen to you and actually deliver on their promises. And that's what I'm asking Oregonians to do. I'm asking Oregonians to fire Tina Kotek and trust me that I can deliver on the promises that I'm making to turn our state around. And there's nobody that's as experienced as I am. There's nobody with the background and really, you know, the will to get this thing done and fight for the future the way that I am. And I'm grateful to be in this fight. I'm grateful to be able to hold Tina accountable. The governor's track record is abysmal. It's not personal. She is just not leading our state in the right direction. And this election is an opportunity to stand with fellow Oregonians and demand better. And so I am excited to be in this race. Oregonians have been very enthusiastic in response to the election. And they're hopeful, and they're enthusiastic about voting in the upcoming primary. They're enthusiastic about voting in the upcoming general. They're just absolutely fired up right now. And I'm excited to be a part of this.
Do you feel like there's any potential for the governor to get a serious challenger in the primary?
You know, I think she deserves one, but I don't think that that's the way that party operates. So, you know, we'll see. The primary is open until March for filing for these races. And I would be surprised if she had a serious opponent in her primary. But I would just say, based on job performance alone, that she doesn't deserve to be unchallenged going into her reelection. And that's why I'm in this race, because Oregonians should have an opportunity. They should have a choice. And and I'm asking for their trust, and I'm asking for their vote, and I'm asking for an opportunity to fight for them and to fight for a better future for our state.
As things stand now, and of course it may shift by the time it would happen, what are some of the things you'd want to do in the first month if you were elected governor?
You know, I will absolutely tear up the governor's executive orders. You know, stem to stern, top to bottom. She has abused her executive orders in her office, and I will tear up all of her executive orders on day one. I will also fire people. We have people leading these agencies. We have people on boards and commissions that don't understand that their duty is to the Constitution and to, and to Oregonians. And they're not serving in these positions to advance their own personal political agendas. They're just not. They got to start to do the job that they're hired to do. And so that means that people are going to be replaced. And we have to do that to rebuild trust again in the services that government must provide to people. I will declare a homelessness emergency, and I'll use that emergency to actually pull together resources to ensure that we know who is on our streets. And if there are warrants, we have to execute those warrants. There needs to be justice if people have broken other laws. And for people that need help, we need to get them the help that they need to break the chains of addiction in their lives. That's not going to happen by choice. We've seen that deflection hasn't worked. We have to take a firm stand and help the people on the streets. And we have to provide safe communities again.
And how do people get connected to your campaign?
ChristineForOregon.com is our website. And you can find our email there, reach out anytime, and certainly across social media platforms.
All right. Christine Drazen, thanks for being on today.
Thank you, Kyle.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.